That might be the best bit. So, and if you missed, if you were listening to this on the recording, whoever you are, hello. I've just told a story that is a bit more confidential, a bit more sensitive, because we're right in the midst of this at the moment. We're still waiting to hear what's going on with what's going on in Swansea. So that's why we're keeping it quite tight. This will gain us public recognition. It will gain us publicity, favour, all sorts of things. So we're just kind of keeping it quite tight. But right in the midst of this, God really, again, gave me, personally, spoke to me through a parable that Jesus told, a story that Jesus told. And it really educated me about something about the way that God works and was a very big reminder to me the way that God can work. And again, almost, I remember on that Thursday night as we were praying, I don't know if you remember, Stephen, people were praying, go, it doesn't matter what happens. We've changed as a church. We've learned stuff as a church. We've been transformed as a church, not because of this or that, but because we've suddenly seen. And this is the bit that I've been reminded of. That, you know, sometimes in the Christian life, you can pray to God, and you know he's God, but you forget he's the God that parted the Red Sea. He's the God that called Lazarus out from the tomb. He's the God that converted Paul. And we can kind of forget that. We don't forget it. We know it, but we forget it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how to explain it, because it wants us to go, we know it, but we don't know it. And you go, that's who we pray to. As though anything is too difficult for him. So, where was I saying? Oh, yeah, so we were praying. Oh, yeah, so I felt God speak to us right into the midst of this time. And the thing I felt God speak to us was one of these parables. And we've been going through parables anyway. This isn't one we've yet done as a church. And it's about it's a parable linked to weddings. And so, first of all, in order before we dip into it, and I'm just going to encourage you, hopefully, with this and whatever. It's basically, when you first read it, it's a bit weird because we're not used to it. You know, I was thinking about, everybody's pretty much been to a wedding, will go to a wedding, knows about weddings. Some point in your life, you get exposure to weddings. And weddings, we've got all sorts of traditions, haven't we, in weddings. So I was looking at, I thought I'd just have a quick look this morning before I came, at bizarre wedding traditions, right? And one of them is some country somewhere is basically, if you're born at a certain time of the year, apparently. I mean, it's on the internet. Who knows if it's true or not? This is how I get all my research, on the internet. And apparently, if you're born at a certain time of year, then you're believed to be under a curse. And so the way you get out of that curse before you get married is you marry a tree, and then the tree gets chopped down, and that breaks the curse, and then you're free to get married. That's a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Anyway, so that's a bit outside our frame of reference, isn't it? Then another one is, apparently, before the wedding, then another one, this is a weird one, they cover you with all sorts of black and tar and yuck and muck. And they do this to both the bride and the bridegroom. And they do it so that you're prepared for the humiliation and the difficulties that come in married life. Yeah, that's a bit weird, isn't it? Yeah. And do you know which country that is? Scotland. So I read that and I thought, that's odd. That's Scotland. They can have their independence. That's just odd. No, so I thought, bizarre, but that was Scotland anyway. And we have things, don't we? So in our one, we have the wedding ring. We have the bride wears white. And for years and years, for me, if you'd have said, what was another one? And it would be that the bridesmaids come in after the bride. So you get the bride enter, the guy standing at the front, cheery smile, best smile in the world. I love it when you see it. And then the bride comes in, and then the bridesmaids. And there's only a few, about 5 years ago, I think, or whatever, I started to notice there's a different tradition now that takes place. And it's the bridesmaid come first. I don't know if you've been to a wedding. Anybody been to a wedding like that? Yeah, they've obviously got that from some other culture somewhere. Somebody said it come from America, but America probably got it from somewhere else. But anyway. And so actually, I'll tell you this. I was at a wedding in Cumbrian not that long ago. And this guy I work with. And this is, I think, might be the first time I've seen this. Where the music starts to play. We're all waiting. This is brilliant, though. And there's a screen up. It's a big church. And there's a flashy screen, you know, with a camera. So you can see all that's going on. Either you can watch it for real or as most of us do, watch it on the screen because I'm all used to that. And the music's building up and it's really, the anticipation, the readiness. We felt it if you've been at a wedding. Bridesmaid one comes in. Wow. Pause, music builds. And you don't know how many bridesmaids there are going to be, do you? So bridesmaid two comes in. Music builds. You're thinking, well, it's going to, you can't help it. You're there going, it's the bride next, it's the bride next. Anticipation, the readiness that is there. And then three, the next bridesmaid come in. It's Shannon. Shannon, we're just discussing a wedding and bridesmaids coming in. Come in. Oh, I thought it was Lauren. It's Shannon. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. Anyway, bridesmaids come in. Third bridesmaid. By now, you are, come on, where's the bride? This is exciting. Fourth bridesmaid. She's a popular girl. You're thinking the next one that comes in has got to be the bride. Now, screen up. People are watching it on the screen. People are looking. Everybody at this point is expecting the bride. But every family has an Auntie Hilda. And Auntie Hilda is late. And Auntie Hilda is not at the normal, you know what I mean by this, normal marrying age. And she's got her shopping bag, and she comes in. And it's one of those moments, she came in perfectly in time with all the other bridesmaids. Everybody thought it'd be the bride, and it was Auntie Hilda came in. And when you watch back the wedding video, you can see lots of people laughing. And you're amazed that the bridegroom didn't go, what? No way, and do a run. But he didn't. And then eventually the bride came in. So we have these traditions, don't we? And I think it's important to understand that every culture has different traditions, because otherwise when you read this parable, and if you want to turn to it, it's in Matthew 25, which is in the beginning of the New Testament, about four-fifths of the way through. And so a good example of another tradition that would have been around Jesus' time, and we sung a song right at the beginning, didn't we? Water that turned into wine. And if you remember from that story, right at the end of when he turns the water into the wine because they've run out of wine, the guy who's master of the wedding feast, he goes up to him and goes, wow, you know, to the guy who's organised the wedding or whatever it is, however it works. He says, you've kept the best wine till last. So what most people would do is, at the wedding at that time, they would use the best wine at the beginning. Everybody gets a little bit inhibitions let down and a bit more drunk. And then, of course, they bring out the cheap wine at the end when nobody's really bothered anymore. You know what I mean? So there's these traditions. So this is the one that I wanted to share. Beginning of Matthew 25. I'll just read it through and then we'll talk about what I learned from this. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 bridesmaids who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were wise. The five who were foolish didn't take enough olive oil for their lamps, but the other five were wise enough to take along extra oil. When the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and fell asleep. And at midnight they were roused by the shout, "Look, the bridegroom is coming. Come out and meet him." All the bridesmaids got up and prepared their lamps, and then the five foolish ones asked the others, "Please give us some of your oil because our lamps are going out." But the others replied, "We don't have enough for all of us. Go to a shop and buy some for yourselves." It's interesting. They obviously had 24/7 shops even back then. But while they were gone to buy oil, the bridegroom came. Then those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was locked. And later, when the other five bridesmaids returned, they stood outside calling, "Lord, Lord, open the door for us." But he called back, "Believe me, I don't know you." And he said this, "So you too," Jesus said, "must keep watch, for you do not know the day or hour of my return." So obviously this kind of
story, as I said, is a bit weird for us because we're kind of thinking bridesmaids go out to meet the bridegroom. But this was obviously something that they would have been familiar with then. And this would have been this idea of anticipation. And if you get that idea of, we see a little bit more like when the bridesmaids come in before the bride, you get this sense of it would have gone out at night. Everybody would have been waiting maybe in the village. And then they would have seen the procession of bridesmaids bringing this groom to his future wife. And you can imagine it would be like a very dramatic, better version, if I may wonder, than what we have now, where they walk up about 50 metres down an aisle, trying not to go too fast and enjoy the moment. And that's what we've got here. And we might think as well, when we look at this, we go, and we could be distracted, I guess, by a couple of things. One is that, one of the obvious ones is this, why don't the five that have run out, or the five that have got plenty, it seems, give to the five that have run out? But of course, it doesn't necessarily mean they had plenty. It might mean they just had enough to do what they needed to do. And of course, at a wedding, you know the one dress you're not allowed to wear at the wedding if you're a guest? It's a white dress, isn't it? Why? Because the bride is the center of attention. And in a similar way back then, and now really as well, the one thing you don't wear to a wedding if you're a guy is a morning suit, or something, trying to compete with the bridegroom. The people who are the center of attention, the people who are important in this whole thing, of course, are the bride and the bridegroom. So it's not really about, oh, they're a bit selfish, they could have done this. What it was most important to them was that the procession took place, that the anticipation was built, and the readiness for the bridegroom coming. And so this story, you could look at it in several ways. One is it's about the return of Jesus and readiness and being ready, because that's what Jesus was talking about. And that, of course, is true. But the way to get ready for when Jesus returns is to be continually ready, always, and to have a lifetime of readiness. Does that make sense? See, I run events for a living, that's what I do, down in Cardiff. And I have a team who I'm responsible for, and I use the phrase with them, we need to be event ready. Which makes it sound quite exciting and quite like, wow, it could just happen at any moment. We go, let's put on an event, which is ridiculous because we know when our event's coming up months in advance. But there is a sense of where, in order for us to be ready for the things that we know are coming in the future, we have developed a discipline of being ready as though it could happen immediately. And the bit I guess I want to encourage you over is this. That with the story that I told and all that went on in the hill, I felt God speak to me again and just stir us as a church and say, were you ready? Were you ready? And in particular for us, it was, were you ready financially? Were you ready financially? Was I in your budget? Was I in your planning? What if God showed up like that, suddenly requiring us to sacrificially give as part of our worship? Were you ready? And the phrase that's going around the hill now, and we don't talk about money much. In fact, we do exactly what you do. In fact, you do it slightly better than us because I like the two slots with your giving box. We don't do an offering. We don't want our guests to think we're about their money. But we do believe that money and giving is an act of worship. And we do believe that we should build God into our budget. But the challenge is when you don't do the offering stuff, you don't often get to talk about it. And this was an opportunity for us as a church to kind of throw out the question, was God in our budget? Were we ready? And it really challenged me. And I tell you why it challenged me, because I've always strayed away so often from actually over-talking about money. Because I've never really felt like, oh, I've got a particular reason to do it necessarily. And I suddenly learned, actually, the reason to talk about it is to get ready,
because there are some times when God shows up and you need to sacrificially give. And one of the other things we said during this experience for us was this: it isn't about the amount. Let us not fool ourselves. When we had our gift day, as we walked away from the building that day and had a certain amount of money given to us by a church, as the church gave, somebody asked me, was it a successful gift day? And I said, I've no idea. Because I could argue that it's successful by the amount of money we've collected, but actually it isn't necessarily that that is the true measure of success. The true measure of success was this: whether God had stirred people in the heart and people had responded from the heart and given out of what they felt they had faith to give with. That's how we knew it was a success. How could I ever know if it was a success or not? No idea. And I don't know if you know, there's a story Jesus tells in Mark 12, and he's at the temple and he's with his disciples and he's standing probably by those shutter doors and he's watching people give. And he watches a wealthy person come up and make a big deal of their giving. They're stuffing the notes in the box, hammering it down, making it obvious. And then this poor widow comes and she gives 2 coins. And he basically makes the observation, she gave the most. Because she gave out of what little she had and she gave it out of worship. And do you know the incredible thing about that story? Apart from the fact she was a poor widow who clearly didn't have much. 2,000 years later, people are still talking about her sacrificial giving. That's the first thing. Secondly, the other incredible thing about that story, which blows me away, is she's giving, thinking, I hope God sees this. She must have been feeling it. I hope God sees this. He was a heck of a lot closer than she realized. He was probably less than 10 meters away when she gave. So when I talked about this as a church, we said, guys, it's not about how big your budget is, but it's about getting God into your budget. It's about being ready. And it was a challenge to me as well. Is God, am I ready in that key area of my life to give? So for us, that was the oil in these lamps. You know, for us that time, it was about when the master shows up. One, when Jesus turns up, it can go awfully quickly. You've got to be ready. 2, what is the oil in this story? And it could be many things, the oil. But for us in Swansea at that particular time, it was about making sure that we had our money in order as a church and individually. And it's been amazing, really, to hear the church talk and just say, talk about getting God into our budgets. People have been addressing debt. People have been addressing stuff that's going on and going, I need to get God first in my budget. But of course, what I don't want to do is come to you particularly and say, oh yeah, so this story is all about money. Of course it isn't. It's actually, this story is about readiness. 1, for when Jesus returns, but 2, readiness anyway. When we pray those prayers, and you guys will have prayed prayers for all sorts of things. You would have prayed prayers for family. You'd have prayed prayers for finances. You'd have prayed prayers for buildings. You'd have prayed prayer for favor. Whatever it is, my question is, do you have a readiness for God to suddenly show up, where the bridegroom suddenly comes? Is that readiness? And the story that comes to mind, how are we doing, Steve? How am I doing? Oh, 5 minutes to go. Thanks, Steve. That was the signal. 5 minutes ago then. Just one story that comes to mind. And I just want to encourage us, think about readiness for a second. Years ago, my brother Steve became a Christian. He was on a alpha course that we were running in a home somewhere in another part of the country. And I was due to go on nights. I was working a shift pattern then. I was due to go on a night shift. And so I'd gone to go to sleep before the end of that evening. I'd gone upstairs, gone for a little snooze. And my wife-to-be came up, woke me up and said, your brother's emotional. He wants to give his life to Christ. And do you know what my first thought was? That's really inconvenient because I've got a night shift and I'm really tired. I wasn't ready. I'd been praying for him. You've got to be ready. So how do we get ready? Well, Paul writes to the guy, Timothy, and he says, watch your life and doctrine closely. I think these are the ways we get ready, by doing stuff little and often. So for money, it's by getting God into your budget every month. One of the dangers for me is I often do my giving via a standing order. The danger there is it becomes like a bill payment, not an act of worship. So I need to try and sit down every month, think about my budget, and make sure God gets in first, and I make it an act of worship. I need to, the oil in your lamp could be your faith, to just immerse yourself in stories where God turns up on a regular basis. Don't shy away from them. Don't think of those stories. You know, over the years, and I've fallen foul of this as well, you hear those stories, you know, a bit like the story maybe I told, and you're in your story, and you're thinking, well, why doesn't God show up for us like that, you know? But actually, I think the way we need to look at it is going, right, Lord, when I hear those stories, I'm just going to take the lid off my oil lamp, and I'm going to say, pour some oil in and build my faith. And keep my faith topped up for when you show up, that I'm ready. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Hannah and I were laughing going, when this was all going on in that week and after the Thursday phone call, we were going, we're real Christians. We've got one of those stories that people tell. We've never had one before. We're genuine at last. Obviously being sarcastic. But in one sense, you know, you kind of over the years, you hear the stories and you feel like you never get them. And one sense, when you hear those stories, then you can be like, oh. But my encouragement would be, take the lid off. Say, Lord, pour oil in so that I'm ready. And maybe, you know, as I'm saying this, you're there thinking, you know what? I've just actually, over the years, as I've heard those stories, it's been like the lamp has been poured out and the oil has just gone on the floor. Well, I just say, reverse our thinking then. And take the lid off and say, Lord, pour oil in. Give me faith. Let me be ready for when you show up. And sometimes it'd be a while, can't it? So there's that. Another one maybe would just be enthusiasm. Maybe your in readiness and enthusiasm and zeal has been lost. And I'd say, well, do little things to get it back. Serve more. Paul writes to the Romans and says, never be lacking in enthusiasm. Show a genuine love for one another. And so when we actually serve, every week you serve, you know, every time you pour out a coffee, as you were doing the Fraser earlier, you know, it's like, Lord, oil in my lamp. Just give me zeal for the people of God. Keep me ready for when the bridegroom comes. Maybe it's even your expectation of the bridegroom coming. You know, even Jesus turning up. And I just encourage you again, little and often. Little and often. In terms of just reading the scriptures. I heard somebody recently, I thought it was really helpful. He just said, you know, we get into a real habit about reading the Bible or not reading the Bible. And we get all worked up about it. He said, just read a little bit of the Gospels. As often as you can, just a little bit. Just read a little bit about Jesus and get that idea that Jesus is a God that turns up. And I guess, you know, this isn't a polished thing. We've lived with this, we've walked through this, and it's just prompted me really to think about being ready. And being ready for when Jesus turns up. And I don't mean just Jesus turns up and it's all done and dusted. I mean Jesus turns up. And maybe get an expectation here again, afresh, that he's already started to move. The bridegroom is coming and there could be some good times ahead. But get ready as a church. In fact, are you even thinking beyond when the money comes in for your building to be sorted? Beyond that, is there a readiness in all of your hearts for beyond when you actually meet in that building? Not enough. So just be encouraged about that and start stirring your hearts to go, am I even praying for beyond the building being finished? And praying for other things. Because what I've realized is, man, when God shows up, he shows up, and it is fast sometimes, and we need to be ready. And I'll finish with this story, and then Stephen will literally rugby tackle me and pull me down and pull me away if I don't. But I heard this recently, and I thought this was a good way of getting your head around. What if you feel like, because it depends on, you know, how your life has gone and what's happened with you, whether you feel like you're even ready at all, whether you feel like your oil lamp has run dry, where you feel totally and utterly like, oh, God's never been in my budget, he's not even near my budget, or whatever it may be. You know, I can't remember the last time I looked at my Bible. I can't remember, I didn't even know where the Gospels are. There are people in this room like that, for definite. There's people in every church like that. Nobody's allowed to say it, though. That's the thing. Well, I heard this story recently. It's about some famous violinist. And this violinist, back in the 90s, was brilliant. Okay, he was brilliant. And he was about to play before a massive audience. It was like coming to the end of his career, and he's about to play this six-minute piece, apparently, which is awesome. And as he starts to play the piece, there's four strings on a violin. That's about the only bit I know, and you do that, don't you? It's amazing. Anything comes out good, it comes out of doing that. But anyway, one of the strings breaks, and everybody's like, oh, no. And there's a big pause. And then this guy, apparently, then continues to play the piece, transposing the three strings into the fourth string and basically making it work. I don't know, it sounds clever, whatever he did, because I'm not a musician. Perlman. Cultured. Always thought Stuart was quite cultured. Obviously not, though. Wrong bloke. But we believe you knew what you were talking about. Anyway, this is incredible. And at the end, obviously, everybody is well chuffed, yeah? Giving a good applause. And he goes up and he grabs a microphone and he says, all my life, my goal has been to make music out of what remains. To make music out of what remains. Well, in a similar way, you know, if you're there and you're going, I haven't looked at my Bible, God is nowhere near my budget, my faith is down there, my cynicism is up there, whatever it may be, you can go out of here going, I feel so far from what this guy up front said. Well, my encouragement is this. You can't change yesterday, can you? But you can take the lid off the oil lamp now and say, God, start topping it back up again. Level it out and start topping it back up. So I'm ready for when the master returns. Do you mean? That's my encouragement. So can I pray for you guys? Is that okay? How's that, Steve? Okay, we'll talk about it in the car. Okay. Lord Jesus.